lost to ignorance and confusion. Three men arose from humble beginnings with a message of wisdom and hope for their troubled times. Three men who would eventually change the very face of humanity.
But they fell off a cliff. So, here are some other guys.
It's Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Bill, and Janice.
Good evening and welcome to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil for this Tuesday, September 13th, 2016. We are broadcasting to you live on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto, Canada, and streaming to you live on the web at songtalk.ca/. Now, don't forget the slash, live-stream. Song Talk Radio is a show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of songwriting. Brand new songwriters or established professionals. And on the show, we share tips, tools, and techniques. And together, we all become a little bit better at writing songs. I am your host tonight, Bruce Harrett. And joining me tonight are the members of the Song Talk Radio Action Team. We have Phil Emery.
That's me.
We have Neil Modi.
Resident and accounted for.
And handling our social media onslaught tonight, Janice Ho.
Good evening.
And last but not least, on the technical board tonight, Nicole Di Donato.
Hey.
During the show, join the conversation and send your comments and questions to at Song Talk Radio on Twitter, and we'll share them with the audience in real time.
We will.
Not fake time, real time. And please stop by our website at songtalk.ca and find out how you can be a guest on our show. Alyssa Baker was born in Calgary, raised in Vancouver, and currently resides in Toronto. She's an actor and a singer-songwriter whose credits span the genres of music, television, and theater. She's a triple threat. Her sophomore EP, Undone, was released on July 1st, 2016, to fan praise and welcoming media. Undone showcases Alyssa's evolution as a songwriter and a new, more mature sound, described by Alyssa as, quote, moody dream pop with hints of electronica. Wow.
Cumbersome.
Alyssa is well known for playing the role of Maggie, a driven, multi-talented, somewhat complex singer-songwriter in the teen TV drama series Lost and Found Music Studios, which airs worldwide on Netflix, Family Channel, and the CBC.
Ooh. CBBC, actually.
Oh, it's CBBBC.
That's in the UK, yeah.
The UK.
Sounds the same, very similar.
It's BBC,
CBBC.
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 Yeah, the children's version of BBC.
Children's version.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's
okay.
The children's BBC. Lovely. All right, so it's not the CBC. Forget I said that. In addition to music and acting, Alyssa is in her second year of studies, where? Right here at Ryerson University.
Go figure.
We're very happy to have you on the show. Welcome, Alyssa.
Oh, thank you so much. Baker. I'm so excited. Oh, I'm clapping. Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
It's so great to have a student from Ryerson on the show.
Oh, well,
and
I'm
someone
glad.
As talented as you.
Oh, you guys are really nice. Cool. Thank you.
A TV star, too.
I don't think we've had a TV star before, have we?
One of the harmonica guys.
Taylor.
Well, he's a voiceover. Cartoon voiceover.
Taylor said he was on Canadian Idol.
Canadian Idol. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not bad.
That's pretty cool.
But we digress. Yeah. So before we get to talking about Alyssa's songs, we have some listener emails.
Listener emails. Yes, we're getting lots of listener emails, and they're always good fun. So please send them in. We got one in from John. Just listened to the program. It was really great and so informative. I don't know much about music, but I learned so much. You guys are great. Jules was amazing. Wow, what a talent. Can't believe she is 15. It was interesting to hear her say that a lot of kids have the same maturity, but maybe don't know how to express it like she can with her writing. Thanks again, John. That was talking about Jules, who was on a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And she was great. And we also got one in from Gary Duke.
He's been on the show before.
Yeah, a couple of times. He also makes this wonderful Metronome app that you can get at the iTunes store.
Called VisiClick.
And this will be a good one. It says, hey, so I'm at the point where others could start singing my songs if I'm inclined to push for that, and I'm left wondering, what's the minimum I need to do business-wise in terms of just protecting my material? I don't have a lot of free cash at the moment, but want to do what I need to do. Any pointers? Where do I register? What do I have to join?
Hmm.
So,
we'll get back to you on that.
Yeah. Well, one thing that you do, there's a lot of things to do, is go to SoCan.
SoCan
for sure.
Definitely.
And And then you can register with that. Mm-hmm. But generally, I think most people feel that it's you don't have to really worry about protecting your material that much. It's hard enough just to be actually listened to, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah. People may have heard of that thing about if you make a CD of your music and then put it in the mail and mail it to yourself but don't open it, then that's copyright. But apparently that's not true.
That's not true.
It doesn't work that way. Heard that, it's not true.
We are not professionals in this area, so we're not giving advice on protecting your songs because we don't know the definitive idea, but certainly a first step would be SoCan.
SoCan will
have
a lot of information.
Recommendation. Yeah. That's what I do for my songs, register them on SoCan, and then they'll track your song for you and make sure that you're compensated for when it's played. And that's actually all I do. I haven't really felt the need to go further into it, as long as you have it fixated. And I always date my songs when I write them. I date them so that I have a track of that, and I usually make a voice memo of them as well so that if I ever, had a problem, I would be able to go, well, here is it in fixation on this day. So, yeah. But that's kind of just my approach to IP.
Well, I mean, I've heard some people actually talk about, registering it with, like, the U.S., there's like a U.S. Congress thing, but that's like $25 a song.
Yeah.
I don't really think that's necessary.
Yeah, that's so true. You can go much further into it, and there's so many different types of intellectual property protection you can get, but they get more and more expensive. So,
and I think if you're going to be recording an album, maybe that's you might want to think about it. But generally, it's not. There's so much music out there. I think the chance of your stuff actually being stolen is pretty low. Mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm. But also had another one from which I thought was an interesting thing we could talk about is it was this songwriter, and he was a country guy, so he's a little bit a very specific genre. But he was saying that he doesn't like songs that are too songwritery, that are too brainy,
too songwritery.
That, yeah, so that if the song took too much thought, mm-hmm. he would throw it out.
Okay.
And I thought it was an interesting point because we talk about, all the fine bits of songwriting on the song.
Mm-hmm.
And, we'll talk, we'll hear a song and we'll go, oh, that's an amazing chorus or what an amazing bridge. And we'll tell our friends. But I don't know if other people really listen to it in the same way. I mean, are we putting on a focus on stuff that maybe, not that we shouldn't.
I'm not sure what he means by songwriter. I mean that there's
too
much, too studied and too clever.
Yeah, too clever.
But that's his style, especially for country. Country tends to have a reputation of being image-driven and honesty-driven and relationship-driven, right?
Yeah.
It tends to be that kind of reputation of this is real and this is real life. It happened to me kind of thing. But I don't know. I would say that, sometimes when you hear, we watch a play or see a movie and you're actually hearing the voice of the writer rather than of the character?
Yes.
That's, I think, what he means, where, oh, there's the writer putting in something to be clever rather than serving the tune.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that can happen in anything. I've seen that in plays. Like, I go, I'm watching a play and the character starts spouting something, a monologue especially, and I go, oh, there's the author. That's not the character would ever say that.
Right.
Author's message.
So when you're listening to the song and you get taken out of the song.
Exactly.
That's problematic.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, is if you get taken out of the song, I think the actual little details and the stuff that we love is certainly, I think, a sign of quality and a sign of attention. But I think as long as it doesn't pull you out of the art.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And well, the other thing about this show is that if we didn't do that, then we have nothing to talk about.
Because
we have had guests come on and say, I just felt it this way.
Yeah.
And then we get into the discussion.
Well,
about
let's ask Alyssa. You're the guest today.
Sure.
So has it happened to you where a song you've created seemed overwritten or overstudied and you rejected it or went back to a simpler form?
For sure. I think that does happen. I think sometimes as a writer, it's easy to get caught up in trying to find something deep or meaningful. Do you know what I mean? We really delve deep, and then these metaphors become so complicated, and at a certain point, maybe you lose the base of the song or what it was supposed to mean.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I've actually been working on lately is simplicity. You can say so much with so few words, and so maybe that's what he's getting at. I think that if you can still get across the same message with the same meaning in less words, that's better.
It's hard, actually. Doing stuff with fewer words, I think, is actually harder.
And what you're talking about, Alyssa, actually takes a lot of editing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you got to get to the complex part and then strip it down.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this person's talking about like the kind of songwriter where it just sort of pours out of them and they do one draft and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's no editing because there's a difference there.
I have the feeling he was talking about, kind of too clever stuff, where there's maybe lots of internal, bits of, the stuff
like
that we kind of,
funny word
that's
plays.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's a matter of, one thing is a matter of taste and craft, you know, and also genre.
Yeah, I think
but,
genre.
I want to ask you, Lisa, how did you get started in songwriting? What was the impetus?
Well, I love singing forever and ever. I can't remember a time I wasn't singing, even just at, like, as soon as I could talk. We had so much, we just always had music in my house. So it kind of progressed from out of that, out of a love for singing. When I was 8, I think I wrote my first song, and I was so excited, and then I sang it, and I was like, wow, this isn't really that great as an 8-year-old. And I was like, wow, I don't know. I want it to be better. So I mean, I sort of wrote a little bit, but I was never very confident in it. And then when I was about 12, I think that's when I mean, I'd always wanted to be a musician, but that's when I was like, all right, this is going to happen for me. Like, I'm ready to really pursue it. That's when I started writing consistently.
Did you have some assistance in that? Did you have some theory or any training or teaching or coaching?
Yeah, you know, a little bit. I had, I mean, I had piano training, guitar training, and vocal training. So those were things that I had. So I knew a little bit about.
By 12.
Yeah, yeah, I had been taking all of three of those by 12.
Was that something that you wanted to do, or is that something your parents sort of helped you with?
Actually, it was something I always wanted to do. When I was in kindergarten, I got a good report card, and my parents said, "What do you want? You can have anything in the world." And I said, "I would like singing lessons."
Oh, so, kindergarten.
Yeah, I was 5, yeah, so I just always knew I wanted that.
So you were a soprano.
Wow. Yeah. That's why you have a good report card. I didn't realize that.
What?
That's why you have a good report card. I didn't notice
that.
Oh,
you forgot to do that.
Yeah.
You could have got a lot more in life if you had got a good report card.
Good one.
Can do better doesn't cut it. So at 12, you decide, I'm going to be a songwriter.
Yeah, I decided I'm going to be a songwriter as well.
And you started putting out songs?
Yeah, and I had good mentorship. You know, I had I had an amazing singing teacher, a good piano teacher, such, like, really nice people who were there to help me. So that was Andy Toth and Gordon Cobb, and they were there when
this
I was ready.
Back in Calgary?
Yeah, back in Vancouver. I moved away from Calgary when I was 4, so it was a long time ago.
That was pre-career then.
The 4-year-old me, yeah, exactly.
So did you start letting other people hear your tunes as soon as you started writing that when you were 12? Did you share them with other people, like with your parents?
I always felt really shy about it. So I would show my mom. My mom I really trusted to show. And then after I gained a little bit more confidence, I would show kind of like my singing teacher, my piano teacher, like people like that. Like I kind of worked up the courage, but it took me a little while. I was really nervous about it because it's so personal, you know? And I always felt a little bit nervous sharing such deep thoughts that were real.
Every artist is the same.
Yeah, exactly.
So when did you start when was your first concert?
So well, you know what's funny is I had been singing since such a young age, and the first singing teacher I ever had really wanted me to get out performing already, which I loved. I loved performing. So when I was, you know, 5, 6, I did, like, performances at malls and stuff. So technically, those would be my first, quote-unquote, performances.
But, I mean, when did you debut your own songwriting?
My own. So, I think I was probably 14. I was going to open mics and playing covers, and then at 14 I decided, okay, like, I'm going to share my first original song, and at that open mic I booked my first show.
Nice. Very exciting.
Well, that's great.
It was exciting. I was like, this is the first time I played an original song, and I booked my first gig.
So what's your what's your working your songwriting process like? Are you doing it like every day, or because you're also doing acting as well, so you have all these other things happen once.
And
you're a student.
Yeah. How are you doing? Like, do you have a day, like an hour a day that you're working on songwriting, or are you doing it when you can?
Yeah, I try to do it as often as possible. I find just sort of creatively, and I kind of go through phases. Yeah, I know when I want to write so much every day, and that's all I want to do. And sometimes when it's a little bit more like beating your head against a brick wall. So I try and do it at least every second day. But I do love writing. But it is tricky. I do run a busy schedule at the moment, but it's one of my favorite things to do. So I try and make time for it.
Let's hear a song.
Yes.
What are you going to play for us?
I'm going to play a song called Fine, and I'll perform it live. And it's from the EP Undone that I released in July. So here we go. You good to go?
Yep.
Perfect. You showed up outside to dust, not headed bites, dark blues every night. Don't think you'll come inside. I'm fine with that, I'm fine with that, I'm fine with that, I'm fine. I'm fine with that, I'm fine with that, I'm fine with that, it's fine. Home feels like a room, untangled sheets and move. 9 a.m. morning blues, let days go by for you. I'm fine with that, I'm fine with that, I'm fine with that, I'm fine. I'm fine with that, I'm fine with that, I'm fine with that, it's fine. And a little later when everything is changed, I turn my insides out, but you see me the same. Your name like fingertips that brush against my lips. Never really close, but never far away. Yes, everything has changed. Tuesday afternoon, a long list of to-dos. Your eyes shine in blues, our plans keep falling through. I'm fine with that, I'm fine with that, I'm fine with that, I'm fine. I'm fine with that, I'm fine with that, I'm fine with that, it's fine. And a little later when everything has changed, I turn my insides out, but you see me the same. Your name like fingertips that brush against my lips. Never really close, but never far away. Yes, everything has changed. I wasted the whole day, 'cause all I did was wait. When morning broke the night, a thought of you remained. I'm fine with that, I'm fine with that, I'm fine with that, I'm fine. I'm fine with that, I'm fine with that, I'm fine with that, it's fine. And a little later when everything has changed, I turn my insides out, but you see me the same. Your name like fingertips that brush against my lips. Never really close, but never far away. Yes, everything has changed.
Nice, nice. Ooh. And that was fine, written and performed by Alyssa Baker. You're listening to CJRU, 1280 AM in Toronto. What a lovely song.
The show is...
Oh, it's Song Talk, yeah.
Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil.
Are we supposed to mention that?
You
I
are.
Just thought maybe the
Can't
station.
Hurt.
Yeah. Well, that is the show. That was gorgeous. And
thanks
interesting
so much.
That you have your hook in the verse. So mm-hmm. I'll go to Neil first here for feedback.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things I really like about this song. I mean, obviously, the I'm fine with that, I'm fine with that, I'm fine with that, I'm fine. Like, that's super catchy.
Yeah, thank you.
It gets the title across. Even we were joking before the show started, and everyone was using that phrase
yeah.
already. We hadn't even heard the song yet. You know what I mean? Like, it's that catchy.
Thank you.
The other thing I really like about the melodic phrasing that you came up with, in the verses especially, the lines kind of overlap with each other really nicely. Like they flow in. Like home
so
feels
much.
Like a room, untangled sheets to move. 9 a.m. morning blues, let days go by for you. Like there's no pause between the two parts of the line, which really gives the whole thing a lot of really forward movement. And there's a lot of finesse there.
Oh, I appreciate that very much.
The
Thank you.
The song marches on. And the chorus is repeated. And it's a good chorus, so sign of a good chorus. I wanted to hear it each time. It was a real shift. Like mm-hmm. you've got a hooky verse, but it's a more quiet verse. The guitar was more quiet,
mm-hmm.
the voice was more quiet.
And, yeah, for sure.
And then you powered through the chorus, but at the end, you did this lovely thing at the end, and then everything has changed.
That was a really nice little detail, actually.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Especially at the end, the very end of the song. It's like you stopped the guitar entirely, I think, right?
And, yeah, pretty mm-hmm. much, yeah.
And it was, I love an ending, like a surprise ending, right?
One thing I want to mention is we got a tweet in from Tony Burns. Hey, Tony, nice to hear from you again. Mm-hmm. He's asking about the lyrics. And, of course, you can get the lyrics on our website at songtalk.ca. It'll be on the front page. So you can go and download the lyrics for the song and follow along.
Right.
Yes.
Cool.
What's he asking about?
The lyrics.
Whether or not there's lyrics.
Oh, yes.
No comment this time.
Yeah, they're on the site.
Yeah. Phil, your feedback on the song.
Well, it's great. You know, I love the fact that at the end of the verses you had It's Fine.
Mm-hmm.
That little sort of, again,
yeah.
And it's interesting. There's a little detail that we'll appreciate. Now, I'm not sure any... I think it doesn't sound too obvious, which I think is important, but it's a nice little thing that just kind of tweaks it a little bit.
Well, here's a question about that. When you're performing that live, do you ever accidentally sing "I'm fine" at the end?
I mean, maybe I've done it before, but I don't think I often do because conscious of it because it was such a specific choice to change that word.
It has to end with "it's fine."
Yeah, because technically, like, it's about convincing yourself. I'm like, obviously, the person that the song is like, she's not fine. I'm not fine.
Yeah.
But you know, the more you say it, the more you believe it. But you know, I'm fine. It's fine. It's fine. Yeah, whatever. That's such a like dismissive way of saying. Instead of saying I'm fine and convincing yourself, you go whatever. It's fine.
Yeah.
Dismissive. You know.
A lot of interesting thing though. You had almost kind of like a bridge in the I guess the fourth verse because it's a little bit, it's not a total bridge but a little bit of a bridge because the melody.
There's something different there.
I changed the chords as well. The chord.
There was
quality.
A chord shift.
Yeah, there was a chord shift. Yeah, it's very subtle, but
can you show us the difference?
Yeah, so this is kind of how the verse goes, right? It's just kind of trucking along, and then the bridge comes in and does this.
Yeah.
So it's similar, but it's subtle.
It actually is quite different.
It is different.
That happens in the final verse?
In the final verse. There was a slight shift there, right?
Nice.
One thing is, it's interesting, and I wanted to talk about this, because, you know, I listen to a lot of old, like all the classic stuff from Motown and so on, but, you know, listening to all modern pop songs, they have a very particular approach to their melodies. And there's not, you know, some of the old, when you listen to the old Motown stuff, they could almost be Broadway songs. They have huge ranges.
Sure.
They have jumps. They have these, you know, choruses that are a jump. They jump a fifth very often, you know, kind of big things like this. Where I noticed that the notes between your verse and your chorus are actually very close to the same. There's not a real
There's not a huge
difference.
Lift there.
I mean, can you actually play the first line of your chorus?
Yeah, for sure. It goes... And a little later when everything has changed.
And then the first verse of your verse.
You showed up outside, dude does not have
that. Well, there's the money note. The little is the money note.
Yeah.
Right? So all you do is go high for one note, and you've got that catchiness that doesn't...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's
interesting. It is a modern, a kind of a very modern melody. It doesn't sound monotonous, which, you know, it's still actually very, you know, there's lots of little attentions to melodic changes, you know. It's not like, you know, it's like sometimes it's nice to be a God singer when they just say, you know, it just all comes out where I can tell this is, you sort of thought of it stuff, which is kind of nice. When, you know,
thanks. Yeah, I definitely did think about it. Like, I wanted to be cohesive, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I want the song to have a definite progression.
Do you write for your range? Then for your own range, I assume.
Yeah.
Where your comfort zone is. So are you, do you have a big range like your TV show? I haven't seen it, but is that more show tune style writing or is it
pop
writing?
No, it's pop writing. Yeah, okay. We have so many amazing writers working on the show, but definitely pop writing. But we have so many different genres as well. So it's pop, but it could be like folk pop or alternative or rock. You know.
So do you look for melodic? Do you look for melodic range in your songs? Is it something you purposely do or don't do?
Yeah, I love melody. That's my favorite part of writing songs. That's definitely what I love to do. And I love singing high as well. So I love to play around a bit with range in that sense. I don't have the lowest voice in the world, but I definitely feel really confident going into my higher register.
Well, I notice Shawn Mendes, his latest song, they started him down in his baritone-ish range, so that when he goes up, it's really powerful.
It's a contrast,
because
he
was singing up there all the time in his first hits, I think.
Gotcha.
But that Bieber does that too. Like they'll put him down as far as possible to get that warm sound, and then when there's the chorus hits, there's this huge lift, in terms
that's
of the tone and everything.
I always think it's a good idea to actually explore your range, even if it's limited. I mean, sometimes kind of going down, and I know one of the problems I have with songwriting is because I'm often write songs while sitting on my couch watching the TV. So you kind of come up with these ideas. But the problem is I write it in a key that I can't sing.
Right.
So I have to kind of sort of basically roam all over the guitar to find out where I can actually sing.
Gotcha.
So I don't have a huge range.
Do you have a key that's your favorite key?
F sharp, maybe.
Sharp maybe.
It's a, yeah.
That's a good one. That is a good key.
When you wrote this song, was it? Yeah. I mean, the melodies are extraordinarily strong, right?
Oh, thank you.
So was that like one of the first things you wrote about this, or did it all come at the same time, or lyrics, music, melody?
Yeah,
what came first?
Yeah, so generally for me, chords come first, almost always. So I was probably just fiddling, because these are chords that I don't usually use, actually.
Yeah, you're way up on the neck there with no capos.
Yeah, way up on the neck.
So you're like in unknown territory.
Yeah, I was literally fiddling because I'd been at a show. I can't even remember, but I saw somebody playing, you know, just kind of regular chord shapes, but up higher on the neck. And I thought that was really cool, because you get such interesting sounds. So I started fiddling with that, found this chord progression that I liked. And then I generally just go from there. I find a melody, and I just started fiddling with melody until I find something that I like. But since that's kind of the part to me that I think is most intuitive, I'll just start humming or law-ing or whatever. And then it's a stream of consciousness thing for me. I'll just start kind of fiddling and go, okay, just random lyrics will just start coming out, and I won't even think about it that much. Maybe it's a line that was in my head from before, but I'll just start singing random words until I find a phrase that I like. And then I build from there.
That's actually how I work. I mean, some people actually start off with a very clear idea of what they want the song to be. Right? I've had a stroke.
An intention.
That's how I start.
Yeah.
Whereas you come up with a song, and I just sing random words. But the problem is, I keep on singing random words until basically I've completely finished the song and often recorded it.
Gotcha.
And then I'm trying to sort of plug in words.
Right,
you know,
okay,
which
cool.
Is, which is a bit of a, which is always a challenge because you're kind of, you know, just trying to.
Do you start on the piano or the guitar?
I play both, so depending on song.
Do you get a different song out of the piano than you do out of the guitar? Do you
think? Oh, yeah. There's a definite mood that comes with each.
What's the mood? How would you define it?
I that's such an interesting question. Thank you. That's a good one. I don't know. I think that part of it is that I've been playing piano longer, so I just feel a little more confident with my chord quality. So I know what I'm looking for when I go on the piano. So that's one quality that I get from it. On the guitar, I don't know my chords as well, so it's a little bit more of an exploration. You know what I mean? So if I find a chord that I like, maybe I have no idea what chord it is at all, but I like the way it sounds. Like in this song, I'm like, I don't know what I'm playing.
It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if it sounds good. So there is that. And also, I find myself on the piano tends to be moodier and slower.
And it's nice to actually play something that you're not really strong in, because you're not going to fall into that, well, my hands always do this, or I always
totally.
C or D minor. And, you know, because you're not playing your normal instrument.
Exactly.
It kind of forces you to try a bit different.
And, you know, I've been playing guitar for a while, so I've pushed myself to try and get better at it, but my theory is just, it's just not the same as
well,
it
most
is.
You see, that's the thing about guitars. Yeah. Most guitars don't have any value.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, like most
they have
of them
fingers.
Actually don't even know, like really good guitars often even don't even know scales. They just
totally.
Do it all by feel.
Totally.
You know,
so I feel like I go more by feel on the guitar, but I know what I'm looking for on the piano.
We got a tweet in from Sharon. Such thoughtful songwriting. So interesting to hear it discussed. Thank you, Sharon.
Oh, that's nice.
Actually,
thank you.
Talk a little bit about where. So when you say stream of consciousness for the lyric, then. I mean, there's obviously a theme here, right?
Yeah, completely.
So then you go back on the stream, or do you start with the stream of consciousness and then latch on to something a little bit more focused and then try and develop that consciously?
Yeah, so depending on the song, sometimes I'll go in with a direct mindset of, okay, this is kind of the song I want to write. This is the story I want to tell. Other times, not so much. It's when I just had a bit of an idea of what I wanted it to be, so I did, but I went on stream of consciousness for that first line, so, you know, you showed up outside.
Was that the first line?
Yeah.
That's a good first line.
Oh, thank you.
That's the heart. I think if you have a strong first line, that makes things so much easier.
Yeah, completely. Yeah.
You know, I often have, I start actually often with the second verse or
okay, cool. I always I always start at the top. Yeah, I always start at the top for some reason, generally. Maybe not always, but generally. I start at the top.
That's a good way of doing it.
Thank you. Yeah.
And Phil, tell us a little bit about what's happening on Song Talk in the future.
Well, thanks, Bruce. For those of you just joining us, you are listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto and live streamed on the web at songtalk.ca/livestream. And tonight, our guest is Alyssa Bicker. Don't forget, we love to hear from you, so please tweet in your thoughts and comments to @songtalkradio or via email at feedback@songtalk.ca, and we'll share your thoughts in real time, and you'll be famous too. And, of course, you can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned here on Song Talk Radio at our resources page at songtalk.ca/resources. And coming up on Song Talk Radio in the coming weeks, we have on September 20th, All About Chords with Frank Horvat, which will be good. That's the idea. Basically, by the end of the show, you'll be able to figure out any chord that you'll come across, more or less.
Mm.
On September 27th, we have Stephen Witkin. He's going to talk all about musical theater, I believe.
Yes, yeah, songs, his favorite songs from musical theater.
From musical theater. So lots of jazz hands. And, of course, October 4th will be Matt Gerber. And if you're in the Toronto area, please join us for our next Songwriters Roundtable meetup on Sunday, September 25th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Transact Club. It's free to join on meetup and free to attend the roundtable. Stop by songtalk.ca/meetup for all those juicy details. Back to you, Brucey.
Okay, and Neil's got a
tweet. We've got a
tweet
come in from Christy Baker. I'm assuming she's
that's
related.
That's my mom.
That's mom. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom.
She says, at Song Talk Radio, Alyssa Baker, hi from home. Who is your favorite songwriter and why?
Ooh, good question, Mama. Ooh, while I'm talking about family, it's also my grandma's birthday today. So happy birthday, Grandma Baker.
Happy birthday. We didn't get you a card, sorry.
But yeah, my favorite songwriter. Okay, so my favorite band of all time is the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Which is,
I can hear a lot of their stuff in your music.
Yeah, I know, right? It's just the exact same, not even slightly. But no, not at all. But I love.
Just amazing.
Oh, so amazing. I can't even tell you. But a lot of just observing songwriting has come from just kind of listening to Anthony Kiedis, and his lyrics are obviously so interesting to me.
Yeah, I can sort of hear some of his more.
Yeah, I mean, he is so metaphorical, and all of his lines are just take so much. You have to listen to them and
why
analyze.
Why do they always take their shirts off, though? I don't get that. That's
who knows?
Because they're all cut, I think. Is the
they're built. Yeah, they've got, yeah. They can do it.
They can do it if they want. But yeah, I mean, I find his lyric writing style to be so interesting. So it's not necessarily exactly how I think I'll write, because I'm not him, obviously, and I think he just is such a poet. But I've learned a lot, I think, just from looking at his lyrics.
Any Canadians? Sorry, go ahead.
We got a tweet in from Tony Burns about the Achieving Simplicity. Leonard Cohen's anthem is 241 words with more than 800 pages of notes behind it.
Yeah, and
that's
it shows.
That's so true.
Anthem, the song Anthem.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a lot of pages.
That's not a lot of rewrites.
Have you ever done anything that much?
Oh, man. I mean, nothing like that. But there are songs that, you know, I'll look at after the fact and see, this is too wordy. This is too complicated. People aren't going to get it. I want songs that, well, first of all, I want songs that people want to sing, because that's going to be help you get a hit, right? Yeah. So if you keep it simple, people are going to want to sing your song. And I want things that people can connect to. So if you're spending the whole time trying to figure out what I'm saying or what I mean by that, maybe it's not something that you're going to feel for yourself. So I want to write a song that you can hear it and go, oh, maybe I haven't had the exact experience, but I can totally relate to it.
You can put yourself into the
exactly.
song.
So that's when I take a song and go, this is too complicated. I have too many metaphors. It's not making sense. Let's trim it down. Let's make this simpler.
That's what I always found with Oasis. They always had like so many metaphors. I have no idea what their songs are about.
They're about metaphor.
And
actually, that's a totally viable way of writing too, though. Do you know what I mean? It's another style.
So, Alyssa, I'm curious about any Canadian songwriters that you listen to and say, gee, I wish I'd written that song, or that you've studied at all?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The
Canadian
side of things?
I mean, I love Feist. Mm-hmm. Feist is amazing. She's so cool. I just love her sound and her vibe, and obviously her writing is also very good. Interesting story, I think. They tell a really good story, her songs. So I do respect that, and that's something that I also aspire to do, is I want to tell a story from beginning to end, you know?
Yeah.
I want people to be like, oh, I feel that. I can relate to that. That would be a big one for me, Canadian.
And where do you want to go with your songwriting? Where is it going to take you, do you think, in terms of a career?
Well, I mean, this is the career I want. I want to be a singer-songwriter, and I've always wanted to be a performer since I was just like a tiny, tiny little thing.
Right.
So that's what I wanted to take me to.
Keep writing for yourself and possibly other people.
And other people.
Them.
Yeah, and you know, honestly, like I want to write songs that can be hits, you know. I want to write songs that but can still be me, you know. I want to find that niche of the industry that is just, you know, missing something, and I hope I can fill that, you know. I hope
something
I can do that with my writing.
I wondered is, you know, because you have a pretty big background in acting, I mean, you've done it a lot, obviously, does acting kind of give you a framework to put songs on, because you're, as an actor, you're really conscious of a narrative, because you have to keep your character in the position and time in the story. So you're very conscious of narrative. Does that, I always wonder, does that kind of help you with songwriting so that you can impose a narrative on the song?
That's such an interesting question. I would say I'm a lot more confident in my music than I am in my acting, because I've just been pursuing it longer. So I think that maybe it would be the other way around, actually.
If anything,
I think that my singing and my ability to take on like different roles or different perspectives from writing would help me in my acting. I could see it going both ways for sure. But being an actor can only help, and being a musician. It's doing any artistic outlet can only help other artistic outlets, right? But that's a really interesting question.
Acting is so different, because acting, it's like your words are written for you.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
And you have to, like, I didn't realize, because when I started working in theater, I didn't realize how much power the director had.
Yeah, so true.
And the director wants you to do something, you might think it's the stupidest thing you've ever heard, but you still have to kind of do it, because that's your job,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, so...
And you argue, and then you get fired.
Well, and like, see, when you go to see a bad movie and you blame the actors, I mean, that's really not fair. They're just doing their job.
Right,
it's like blaming people who do the craft.
You're right. It is really different. But I feel like your the way your brain shifts into that creativity, that is similar. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, I can feel a distinct shift when I'm in my, you know, acting zone or in my music zone. You know what I mean? It's about creating.
Do you find that with your songwriting, then you take on different points of view? You take on different personas almost?
I think that would be, if I'm writing from a position of strength in one song, it would be so different than writing from a position of vulnerability in another, you know? If I'm writing, I'm the coolest chick out here type of a song, I'm going to want to assume that kind of cool girl vibe. But if I'm writing about being broken or having my heart, you know...
That's not necessarily coming from personal experience.
I think, partially,
but some of it is coming from just imagination, imagining what it
Yeah,
might
of
be
course,
like.
What it might be like. But I think that, you know, in real life, we take on different personas as
of
well,
course,
right?
Yes.
So it kind of influences my writing as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's hear another tune.
Cool. Oh,
we're going to hear a recording this time.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay. So we're going to hear a second song from Elizabeth Baker, and this is a recording of Invisible Days.
Voices trailing. tattoos, dancers fading. You live invisible days. My heart's on your door frame.
Alyssa Baker,
so
that was a recording. And you are listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil here at CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto.
In Toronto.
That's pretty good, wasn't it, Phil? I did much better that time. So I was asking, while we were listening to that tune, I was just asking Alyssa about the production, because now we've got a recording. There's lots of choice of instruments, arrangement, levels, mix, and all that. So you co-produced this with...
Yeah, my singing teacher, a long time, and my mentor, and just a general great guy, Andy Toth.
Andy Toth.
Yeah, that's right. I basically messaged Andy, and I was like, how do you feel about... making an EP together, and he was so down and amazing and super supportive. And I mean, I don't think I have as much of a producer brain. I'm trying to access it, and I can, but it's just I haven't developed it enough, right? So I was like, I really want somebody who knows me and who's so smart with music, who knows much more than me. So Andy was the guy for that. And so he took producer seat, and I got to co-produce, so I had a good voice in there, but yeah, I owe a lot of it, much of it to him.
Very sweet and bright. It's got this brightness with all the bell sounds and everything like that. It's like, it's a pop song that makes you, like, I don't know, it's very...
it's very light.
Light and entertain and entertaining every bit of the way. Like, I loved your rhymes, like singing, thinking, trailing, fading. And I also like the spaciousness in the verses. Like, there was lots of space between the lines.
Oh, thank you.
And then when you hit the chorus, you just... Wow, here we go.
Well, and that's what's nice. Very often when I look at these songs, I mean, there's a couple of things that always makes me, when I hear songs like this, makes me think. One is you don't need a lot of words. And I'm always, because I make up words, go, so, I mean, I'm just trying to basically figure out how to get those syllables to fit in my lines.
Right.
But you don't need a lot of lines. And another thing... No, we don't normally talk about the quality of the singing because that's really not what the show is about. The show is about the songs, you know.
Right.
But you have a wonderful soft way of singing.
Oh, thank you.
Which, and it feels like you're almost just kind of throwing off the lines.
Okay,
you know,
cool.
They're not overwrought, which is a really
it's
nice
very
quality.
Relaxed.
Which is, but it's a very hard thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, and I like to, I always think, it'd be nice to do that. And you think it would be a simple thing to do, but it's actually not an easy thing to pull off.
Thank you so much.
I think that's someone who's been singing since they were five. So there's no fear. It's just, I'm going to tell this story.
What I loved is at the end of on your verses, you had this really, and I guess this is that clever thing we're talking about, the stuff that we'll appreciate, is On the end of each one of your verses, you have my coat is in your foyer.
My scarf's near the doorway.
My hat's on your door frame. Mm-hmm. My shoes drift down your
That's
hallway.
Really cool.
Oh, thank
I mean, you
have,
like,
so
this
much.
One kind of concept right. that you sort of repeat, but instead of repeating the same word, the same words, or just, you know, replacing one word, you're keeping the same concept.
Thank
but kind
you.
Of, you know, putting it on yeah. each one, which is really cool.
Oh, well, I really appreciate really that. Nice. This is actually the song that I think I'm probably most proud of, and it has the most mm-hmm. thought in it, because the way I structured each of the verses was so that the third line would be, you live invisible days, and the last line would be about some article of clothing. And then, you know, my rhyming scheme is that there's a rhyme at the end of the line, because it's like, yeah. you know, fading, mm-hmm. trailing. But in the final verse, I changed the rhyme scheme, because mm-hmm. that's when the mood changes.
Ah,
yeah, because,
right.
you know, you're having this amazing, it's kind of about, you know, like having an amazing night, but it's about, you know, yeah. the invisible days concept. We can talk about that too if you're interested,
you're gone.
But
you're gone, basically.
But you're gone at the end.
Yeah.
I love Dance Floor Kitchen. I don't know, it just conjures up all these images, like,
yeah. thank
it's
you.
Like a large room where you could just dance in the kitchen.
Or basically you're dancing in your kitchen with a yeah. special person.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I love that.
Oh,
love
thank
that.
You so much.
There are little details from life that the specificity of them we talk a lot about in lyric writing, that they're specific. It's offbeat singing. It's my coat in the foyer. The brick walls in one room living. I totally get that when you're younger. You have one
Thanks.
Room, basically.
Yeah, legit.
Either you're sharing a space or you've got a studio apartment with a brick wall and you have one room. So, Neil.
Yeah, I'm really appreciating everything that you guys have said up until now, of course. I'm also appreciating the structure, because once again, you've got this kind of it's a bit of a fuzzy line, what's verse and what's chorus, right? Which really gives it this kind of, I'm hesitant to say indie vibe, but
yeah,
you know what I mean?
It sort of
strays outside the conventional pop sensibility.
For sure.
Right? And because once again, you've got You Live Invisible Days. It's in your verse. The title's in your verse. It's not in your chorus.
But you still know it's called Invisible Days.
You absolutely know it's called Invisible Days. Because that's really the only repeated lyric.
Yeah.
You know, and then the
choruses are repeated.
And the chorus or B part. Yeah. I don't know if you're calling it the chorus. I suppose it doesn't matter. But
yeah.
the B part, of course, has that difference like Bruce was talking about. It's less spacious. You got the melody running pretty much the whole way through.
For sure.
And perfectly catchy. I love the line, I still don't understand
the words
you leave inside your mouth. That's just great.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
We got a tweet in from Gary Baker. Well done, Alyssa. Two great songs. Another home run, sweetheart.
Aw, it's my grandpa. so
the
cute.
The whole family.
Was this
listening.
One piano or guitar?
This was a guitar. A guitar song.
Like it.
And but it was really based off of a concept, actually. I heard a quote once, and it was, everybody around you's lives are happening invisibly. And I said, I was like, every single person you pass by has an invisible world that they're living in. And I was like, whoa, yeah, they do.
Yeah.
And so I kind of took that concept and was going, well, I had just moved to Toronto and everybody I was meeting was a new person. And so it was just so hard to meet people, because you could have such a fun day or a fun night with a special person or with anybody. But the next day you're going, I don't know them. I can't make these connections. Like, I don't know anybody.
Yeah.
I don't know their lives. I don't know what they do with their days. And it's especially tricky with a romantic relationship, I think, because you can't see a person every second of every day. And if you've just met them, you don't know their history. So how do you really know people?
Well, and I think that's one of the problems with being in Toronto, is that it's hard to have repeated exposure with mm-hmm. people, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it's hard to, and that's how you develop those really close friends.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, we get to see each other every week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Boy, and that's not easy.
I tell you.
After three years.
Unless you get involved in a club, that can be hard to do, because people you know, people are all the stars of their own movie.
Yeah.
Well, that's why people in Toronto, though, there's Meetup, right? And our Meetup songwriters group is, people do want community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you can meet people in Toronto. You
join
100%. Something and stay with it long enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how the three of us met. We were at this songwriters roundtable Meetup for a couple of years before the whole idea of a radio show ever came up.
That's so cool.
Establishing some relationship already.
But, I have a question, Alyssa.
Yeah.
When you're talking about the concept behind this, where does the coat, the scarf, the hat, and the shoes, and where does all that
fit
in?
So basically I took the idea of that and made it into a story. So essentially it was supposed to be, you know, about just like a night, you know, with a person who, like, maybe you love or who you like or whatever. And it's just... like, it's just supposed to symbolically show you just kind of, like, getting a little closer, you know what I mean? So, like, you know, you're getting comfortable. Like, you're just chilling, you're dancing, your coat's there.
Your shoes are off.
Your shoes are off. Like, you're just, you feel comfortable. It's supposed to represent that. So that's why, and it also moves closer into the house. So it starts in the foyer, moves near the doorway, on your door frame. You know, you're getting more comfortable. And then you leave because you're drifting down the hallway. You're gone, right? At the very end. So that's kind of what it was supposed to symbolize. So it's all about this trying to get close. But then in the end, nothing happens.
Who's the you?
You just
in
go
here?
On.
Who's the you live in Visible Days? Is that you?
It's the other guy. Or the guy, technically, in the story. So
she's invisible.
She's saying, you know, maybe you and the guy are having, you know, such a cool time getting to know each other, but your days are invisible to me, and tomorrow. And if we don't see each other again,
Doesn't speak, you don't know what he's going to say. There's the words left
inside him. Then, like, you still don't know anything about the person. And the thing is that also, this is another kind of part of that concept, was that if you only see a person one time and then you don't see them again for like months or weeks, how do you know that one tidbit of time that you had with them is real?
One's a little bit.
I stalk them.
That's always a good approach. I do agree.
Because then you're liable to see them again, but they may not want to see you.
I know,
but you do see.
And
them
it's hard to tell with new people, because as a person, I think I'm a little bit more on the shy side. Reaching out to a person, you know, I always assume maybe you don't want to. Maybe I don't know. I don't want to bother you. So it's just, if you don't see a person for 3 months, how can you know that tidbit, that one night that you spent hanging out, is really them?
Just in terms of crafting this song, I think that's really great, because you started with that very kind of specific idea, right? But then kind of abstracted it out into a kind of a narrative, a kind of abstract lyric, so people can sort of bring their own stories into it.
Yeah.
It's one of those kind of songs, which is what I really like about it, that it's catchy, it's melodic, and you can listen to it just on that level. You can start reading into the lyrics and appreciate it on a deeper level, and then to hear you talk about it, you can appreciate it on an even deeper level.
Thank
right?
you so much.
Well, and I think that's the thing about good songwriting, is that it is clever, and there's artisanal attention to it. There's care and there's thought, but it doesn't stand out. You know, like sometimes
it's
I found with
pointing
it's
not, at
it's not like this is the message and this is
I found sometimes with jazz. I mean, they're so about the playing that the playing becomes the thing, as opposed to the music.
Right.
Yes,
you know, and you know, it's like you don't have to play 5 million notes; you can just play 2 notes, and that's just as valid.
Oh, we got another tweet in, do we?
I think so.
We've got a tweet from Leah, and she says, how do you get inspired to songwrite?
Good question,
cool.
Leah.
That's a great
question.
We'll
hand that over to Alyssa.
Okay. I think that the most broad answer would be just life. I don't know. It could be just like this last song. It was based on this quote and then an observation I'd had that related to myself. But generally, I'll write songs based on real emotions. So, you know, it'll be founded in something, and then I'll create maybe a story around that. But I don't know. It's just like these experiences that you have in life, you know, everything is so human. Every relationship you have, and people can relate to that. So if you're having a fight with your friend, or if I'm having a fight with a friend, I'll write a song about that and create a story around it. Or
so you're inspired by. I'm not sure if Leah means inspired to write, meaning the muse is visiting you. Do you wait for the muse to visit you?
Oh, in
or
that
do
sense,
you just sit down and I'm going to write anyway and see if it gets creative?
It's a bit of it's a bit of both, I would say.
Well, it's almost like just picking out things out of day-to-day life and saying, "Hey, that might make a good song."
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, I find that. You know, I do notice those things in day-to-day life, but I don't really notice that I've noticed them until I sit down to write.
They're in my head,
and I'll maybe observe that, and maybe on occasion I'll have a side thought, and I'll be like, oh, that might make a good song. But I won't just necessarily like latch onto it right away until later.
Was Invisible Days, was that a piano song?
That was a guitar song.
That is a guitar song.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, interesting, because it sounded very piano-ish.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was thinking, like, the chords were... They're fairly straightforward chords, I think. I mean,
that's what maybe we thought it was. Think it was a guitar song.
Yeah, it's like it's mostly just two chords, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Can
it's kind of just
version?
Yeah, I can play it on.
Do you know it by any chance?
I do know it on guitar.
Well, you played. Oh, she has a pink capo. Oh,
I've had that since I was like 10.
Too bad we didn't get that on camera. Oh well.
So
it's on camera. We might just have that on YouTube.
I know. We have it on camera.
So how does this go?
So it goes.
Late nights.
I can sing it to you, get a vibe.
It's like a G form there, right?
Yeah.
That's
Then I kind of give some palm muting thing. That's a dance floor kitchen.
Was that the first line that came out, the dance floor kitchen?
Yeah.
That's great.
Man, your opening lines are great.
Thank you so much.
I always figure if you have a great opening line, the rest of the song is a lot easier.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
You know, Tom Waits is another guy who just has these perfect opening lines that just set the song, you know? And
it's very important as a songwriter to consider that. I mean, it's the same with plays, movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, you go to see a movie, basically you're going to decide in the first 3 minutes whether this is going to be a great film. And when I go to the movies often, if I find it's not a great film in the first 3 minutes, it always gets worse. And I often stay too long.
Yeah.
But the same with television and the same with songs. Like when you're crafting songs, kids, put something powerful at the start. Grab the attention, something unexpected but totally musical, and grab the attention because it's the beginning, the chorus, and the ending that they'll remember, right?
I think that there's I can't remember what it is, but there's a number, and it's like you have this many seconds to get somebody's attention in a song. So you got to put your best foot forward.
So, Alyssa Baker, thank you so much for being with us here
tonight.
Thank
you guys so much for having me. It's been so fun.
That's all the time we have on Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil, coming at you on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto. We'd like to thank you very much, Alyssa Baker.
Well, thank you guys.
Good luck on your television career as well as your musical writing career. And all your careers. Send us, listeners, please send us your impressions via Twitter at Song Talk Radio, via email at feedback@songtalk.ca, Facebook and YouTube at Song Talk Radio, or stop by this website at Song Talk, which is songtalk.ca. You can subscribe to the Song Talk Radio podcast on iTunes at songtalk.ca/iTunes. And don't forget to sign up for our free newsletter at songtalk.ca. We've got so much for you.
And it just went out today, actually.
It just went out today.
So all nice, those fresh newsletters.
It's fresh, so please subscribe to that. You'll love it. You can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned on Song Talk Radio right there on our resources page at songtalk.ca/resources. Now, if you're in the Toronto area, please join us at our next Songwriters Roundtable meetup Sunday, September 25th from 1 to 4 at the Transact Club. Thanks to the folks at the Transact Club for sponsoring us. It's free to join on meetup and free to attend the roundtable. Stop by songtalk.ca/meetup for all the details. We'd like to thank CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto, especially our lovely and talented technical supervisor, Michael Newton.
Thank you, Michael.
And, of course, our program director, Alyssa Matthews. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'd like to thank our Twitter contributors, at Roses and Selena, at Christine Baker, Sharon Rose 2012, Why Not Burns, Gary Baker _ Gary, and Timothy J. Lim. Thanks, guys.
All those people.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for doing that. It makes it a great, it really helps make it a show that involves our audience, which we love. We'd like to thank Janice Ho tonight for deftly handling our social media channels. And thank you, of course, to Nicole, who's been handling the tech. And most of all, we'd like to thank you, the home, or whether you're not at home, the listener.
Yes.
If you're on Twitter, you can follow Neil at
Mondo Art,
Phil
at the Phil Emery,
Bruce at Bruce Harrett, Janice at
Janice Hot Tweet.
That's Janice.
And Nicole.
Nicole K. DiDonato.
And
Alyssa at Alyssa Baker on Twitter.
Alyssa who Baker?
Alyssa Baker. That's it.
Alyssa Baker. And please stop the website. We have a website, as we've mentioned it before, songtalk.ca. You can browse past shows. You can find out how you can be a guest on our show. And that's all, folks. So tune in next week, same time, same channel. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Bye.